Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for March 1st, 2024. I'm your reader, Stephen Gaines. Abortion Policy, D.C. Bureau, Government and Politics, Healthcare. U.S. Senate Dems try to push through U.S. legislation protecting in vitro fertilization. By Jennifer Schutt, February 27th, 2024. Washington. A group of Democrats will attempt to pass a bill in the U.S. Senate on Wednesday protecting access to in vitro fertilization, saying its availability should not be restricted. Their push to quickly approve the healthcare legislation comes shortly after the Alabama Supreme Court ruled earlier this month that fertilized eggs are children under state law, leading several of the IVF clinics in that state to halt their work. Illinois Senator Tammy Duckworth, who had both of her daughters through IVF, said the bill is essential to maintain access to the procedure for parents throughout the country who couldn't start or grow their families any other way. Quote, "After a decade of struggle with infertility post my service in Iraq, I was only able to get pregnant through IVF," said Duckworth, a military veteran. "IVF is the reason that I've gotten to experience the chaos and the beauty, the stress and the joy that is motherhood. IVF is the reason that my husband and I aren't just Tammy and Brian, we are mom and dad." Duckworth said she plans to ask for unanimous consent on Wednesday to pass her IVF bill, which as of Tuesday had 15 co-sponsors, all Democrats. The process is the fastest way to approve legislation on the Senate floor, but it does allow any one senator to block the bill from moving forward. It would not require a roll call vote. Duckworth said she isn't open to calls to rework the bill to include a requirement for some organizations, including Texas Right to Life, that all fertilized embryos be implanted in order for those groups to support the legislation. Quote, "You're going to force a woman to go through a miscarriage by implanting non-viable embryos?" Duckworth said of that proposal. "That's what you want to do?" Quote, "You're going to punish women further, women who are struggling, who scraped together everything they've had in order to go through these procedures?" Duckworth added. Senators on record. Should a GOP senator block the legislation from passing the Senate on Wednesday, Duckworth said she believes that Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer will hold a roll call vote on the bill that would put each senator on record with supporting protections for IVF or not. Schumer, who was at the press conference Tuesday but left before questions were asked of senators, said Congress must pass legislation to give people pursuing families through IVF certainty. Quote, "There's so many countless people we all know who have the joy of children because of IVF," Schumer said. "It's heartbreaking, it's enraging, and Republicans know it." GOP lawmakers throughout the country, Schumer said, are, quote, "like arsonists who set a house on fire and then say, subquote, why is it burning?" End quote. Quote, "Republicans own what happened in Alabama," Schumer said, "and Democrats are absolutely committed to doing everything we can to protect women, families, and reproductive freedom." Former President Donald Trump, the frontrunner for the GOP presidential nomination in 2024, last week called on Alabama lawmakers to come up with a fix for the state Supreme Court decision, and national Republicans sought to distance themselves from it, including U.S. Senate hopefuls in key races. House Bill. On Tuesday, Washington State Democratic Senator Patty Murray said, quote, "Heart truly goes out to all the women in Alabama who are suffering right now," end quote, and called on Republicans not to block passage of the IVF bill. Murray also rebuked the more than 120 GOP lawmakers who have co-sponsored a bill in the U.S. House that would define life as beginning at conception, a move, she said, would put IVF and other reproductive health care at risk nationwide. Quote, "You cannot support IVF and support fetal personhood laws. They are fundamentally incompatible," Murray said. "You are not fooling anyone. Women aren't just going to forgive who is responsible for this, who ripped away their dreams of building their families." Ramifications of Dobbs' decision. Wisconsin Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin traced the Alabama State Supreme Court's decision back to the U.S. Supreme Court's decision less than 2 years ago in Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization, which ended the constitutional right to an abortion. Quote, "When Dobbs was decided, millions of women were stripped of their reproductive rights," Baldwin said. "At that time, Republicans said we were being alarmist when they said the ramifications of this decision would go far beyond abortion care. Quote, they said we were being dramatic when we raised that birth control might be on the chopping block. They said that we were overreacting when I fought to pass the Respect for Marriage Act to protect same-sex and interracial couples, Baldwin added. And they said that we had nothing to worry about when we insisted the right to IVF was in jeopardy. Baldwin said she supports, quote, women's and families' rights to control their destiny without interference from the government or politicians, end quote. And she called on Republicans to do the same by not blocking the IVF bill. Minnesota Democratic Senator Amy Klobuchar said the Alabama State Supreme Court's ruling that ended IVF is just one, quote, example of the chaos and cruelty that has been unleashed since Roe v. Wade was overturned, end quote. Quote, first, they interfered with a woman's right to make her own decisions about ending a pregnancy, and now they're trying to interfere with a woman's right to choose whether to start a family, Klobuchar said. Quote, it is time to enshrine the rights of people to build their own families, Klobuchar said. And again, we welcome them to vote with us to make this clear. D.C. Bureau, Government and Politics. A partial government shutdown is days away. There's no agreement on federal funding yet. By Jennifer Schutt and Ariana Figueroa, February 27, 2024, Washington. President Joe Biden huddled with top congressional leaders at the White House on Tuesday amid a crunch over government funding as well as a familiar stalemate over assistance to two major allies, and no solution immediately in sight. Lawmakers leaving the meeting, which lasted about an hour, said it was worthwhile, even though it didn't lead to any agreements that would avoid a partial government shutdown for beginning this weekend, or clear a Senate-passed package of aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. Quote, it was a productive meeting on the government shutdown. We are making good progress, ellipses. And the speaker said, unequivocally, he wants to avoid a government shutdown, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York said following the meeting, referring to House Speaker Mike Johnson, a Louisiana Republican. Johnson faces tensions and demands in the House. Congressional leaders and the Biden administration have agreed to total spending levels for each of the dozen annual appropriation bills. But far-right conservative lawmakers are pressuring Johnson to include policy riders that Democrats have said are unacceptable. Schumer said it's likely Congress will need to approve another continuing resolution, or CR, to avoid a partial government shutdown. Those stopgap spending bills continue the prior fiscal year's funding levels and policy until Congress reaches agreement on full-year spending bills. Johnson, who has remained noncommittal on putting assistance to Ukraine on the House floor for a vote, said House Republicans are still, quote, pursuing and investigating all the various options on that. Quote, we will address that in a timely manner, Johnson said at the White House of the Global Supplemental Package. Quote, the first priority of the country is our border and making sure it's secure, Johnson said, adding that he's, quote, optimistic, end quote, the House can prevent a partial shutdown. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Kentucky Republican, said after returning to the Capitol that the meeting went well. Quote, well, mainly, we talked about keeping the government open, which I think we all agree on, McConnell said, and I think we're making some real headway on the appropriations process, end quote. Time is short, and the House does not return from recess until Wednesday night. Congress has until Friday at midnight to either pass the Agriculture, FDA, Energy, Water, Military Construction, VA, and Transportation, HUD, spending bills, or to pass a stopgap spending bill for the federal agencies funded within those four bills. Congress has until March 8th to pass the other eight remaining appropriations bill for the fiscal year that began back on October 1st. Otherwise, those departments and agencies would begin a shutdown. Quote, hope springs eternal. McConnell said during a press conference Tuesday afternoon, he believes Congress could pass the four bills due Friday without using a stopgap spending bill to extend that deadline. Quote, I think we're close on the first four bills. Hopefully that won't require another short-term CR, McConnell said, and hope springs eternal. Schumer, speaking at a separate press conference inside the Capitol on Tuesday afternoon, said negotiators on the full-year government spending bills are, quote, greatly narrowing the ground of where the disputes are, end quote. Quote, a key here is making sure that the government doesn't shut down, which means extending government funding after the deadlines if we can't reach that agreement, Schumer said. A White House statement on the meeting said Biden, quote, emphasized that the only path forward is through bipartisan funding bills that deliver for the American people and are free of any extreme policies, end quote. Quote, the president also emphasized the urgent need for Congress to continue standing with Ukraine as it defends itself every day against Russia's brutal invasion, the White House statement said. He discussed how Ukraine has lost ground on the battlefield in recent weeks and is being forced to ration ammunition and supplies due to congressional inaction. Global aid stalled. The Senate voted 70-29 in mid-February to approve a $95 billion emergency spending bill that would provide military and humanitarian assistance to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. The vote came after months on hold as Oklahoma Republican Senator James Lankford, Connecticut, Democratic Senator Chris Murphy, and Arizona Independent Senator Kristen Sinema negotiated a bipartisan bill to address border security and immigration policy at the insistence of GOP leaders. Republican senators ultimately blocked that compromise agreement from moving forward, saying it didn't go far enough. Johnson's opposition to the agreement was one of the factors that toppled the bipartisan compromise. Johnson has been skeptical about passing the Senate-approved assistance package ever since, saying it should include measures to address border security and U.S. immigration. Johnson said Tuesday, following the White House meeting, that he met one-on-one with the president and pushed for the southern border to be addressed. Quote, they understand the catastrophe at the border is affecting everyone, and it is top of mind for all the American people, he said. Schumer said the discussion about assistance to Ukraine was, quote, the most intense I've ever encountered in my many meetings in the Oval Office, end quote, because of the, quote, urgency of supporting Ukraine and the consequences to the people of America, to America's strength if we don't do anything, end quote. Schumer said that while Johnson said he wants policy changes at the southern border, quote, we made it clear to him we can't tarry for the world could be lost, end quote, in Ukraine. McConnell said during the afternoon press conference that he hopes the House will take up the Senate-approved Ukraine bill and pass it without making changes, since if they were to amend the legislation, it would have to go back to the Senate, slowing down the process. Quote, not only do we not want to shut the government down, we don't want the Russians to win in Ukraine, McConnell said. And so, we have a time problem here. And the best way to move quickly and get the bill to the president would be for the House to take up the Senate bill and pass it. Education, government, and politics. Capital clicks. Senate panel advances bill to change community college funding oversight. By Brooklyn Tracy, February 27, 2024. A bill allowing a council of community college leaders to determine the formula for distributing state funds each year has passed out of the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee. Senate File 2373 would form a, quote, President's Council, end quote, of community college presidents and chancellors that would be responsible for creating the formula for distribution of state funds to states' community colleges. The council would require 15 out of its 15 members to approve the formula each year, with the duty falling to the Department of Education if an agreement isn't reached. It would also strike the current aid formula, which Community Colleges for Iowa Executive Director Emily Shields said has not been updated in 20 years, and its requirements from Iowa Code. Representatives from community colleges and organizations overseeing them voiced their support for the bill, saying it will help lessen inequities in funding between the colleges. Iowa Central Community College President Jesse Ulrich said the college currently receives about $2,700 per student in state funding, compared to a neighboring college that receives more than $6,000. Quote, what hopefully our legislature is recognizing is, we know that there's a problem, and your community college system is taking proactive steps to fix the problem, Ulrich said. The legislation was signed by Subcommittee Chair Senator Tim Crainbrink, Republican Fort Dodge, and Senator Jeff Taylor, Republican Sioux Center. Taylor said what gave him confidence in the bill was the fact that the community college leaders are unanimous in their support of it. Subcommittee member Senator Cindy Winkler, Democrat Davenport, said she'd like to see the bill require the Division of Higher Education to handle the formula if the council cannot approve of one, rather than leaving it to the Department of Education in order to ensure the people with the most expertise would be making the decision. Another question she brought up related to high school students enrolled in both high school and college classes. Right now, concurrently enrolled students are included in headcounts for community college funding, but the money those programs generate goes through K-12 funding channels, Winkler said, and those dollars are not accounted for in the bill. Those funds totaled about $40 million in fiscal year 2021, Winkler said, and they need to be a part of this conversation. She also expressed concerns about the lack of stability and predictability that could come from striking requirements of the funding formula from the code, even if agreements have been made among college leaders to not allow any backwards movement in funding to happen at any college. Ulrich said these agreements have been made, but Winkler said they should be put in writing under administrative rules or another label, so those agreements are protected as administrations change. Quote, "We wouldn't want to do anything that suddenly closes the doors of a rural community college because we understand the importance of the workforce training and what we all do across the state," Ulrich said. Cranebrink said the subcommittee would recommend its passing with an amendment in which some of the questions brought up could be addressed. The bill will move ahead to the Senate Appropriations Committee. Government and politics. House Democrats introduced proposals on collective bargaining state retirement accounts. By Robin Opsahl, February 27, 2024. Iowa House Democrats laid out proposals Tuesday they say will help Iowa workers, including measures to add collective bargaining rights to state constitution and raise the minimum wage. Members of the minority party laid out five components of their proposal on workers' pay. The bills introduced include House File 2293, which would gradually increase Iowa's minimum wage from $7.25 to $15 per hour by July 2026. House File 2300, extending the state's sales tax-free holiday in August from 2 days to 2 weeks. And House File 2338, extending state child care assistance to children with parents or guardians employed at a child care facility. House Joint Resolution 2003, another measure introduced Tuesday, would amend the state constitution to add that employees have the, quote, "fundamental right to organize and to bargain collectively through representatives of their own choosing for the purpose of negotiating wages, hours, and other terms and conditions of employment," end quote, as well as to protect their economic welfare and safety in the workplace. Representative Jerome Amos Jr., Democrat Waterloo, said the constitutional amendment will give union members more opportunities for collective bargaining in the wake of a 2017 law that made major changes to public sector collective bargaining laws. Amos, who has been a union member for more than 49 years, said the measure would ensure public and private sector employees, quote, "have the opportunity to collectively bargain in good faith," and, quote, "it is something that is important from a standpoint of individuals being able to make sure that they are being able to provide for their families properly," Amos said. "Unionism, being a union member all this time, it has provided me with many opportunities to lead a good life. Unions help start the middle class." The proposal comes as Senate Republicans are considering legislation that union advocates say would significantly impede Iowans' collective bargaining rights. Workers' rights advocates have held multiple demonstrations in opposition to Senate File 2374, a bill requiring the decertification of public employee unions if a government employer fails to provide a list of employees to the Public Employees Relations Board within 10 days of receiving written notice of intent to conduct a certification election. House Minority Leader Jennifer Confirst said she hopes the decertification proposal is not taken up by House Republicans. Quote, "it doesn't appear to be something that is good at all for workers," Confirst said. Ellipses. "It's a political attack on our public sector workers, on unions, and it's a game. So my hope is we don't see it in the House." Democrats also spoke about another proposal, not yet introduced as a bill, to require employers automatically enroll their employees into an individual retirement account through the Iowa Retirement Savings Plan Trust, if the employer does not offer retirement plans directly. Employees would have the option to opt out of the program. Representative Austin Baith, Democrat Des Moines, said the measure is necessary because of national and state research finding that many workers are not prepared for retirement. "Only half of Iowa workers have a retirement savings plan," he said, and one-third of private sector workers in the state do not have access to a retirement savings plan through their employer. Right now, state data shows that 90% of Iowa seniors rely solely on Social Security for income, Baith said. Quote, it's not right that so many of Iowa seniors, at a time when they should be enjoying the fruits of their labor, instead of just struggling to get by, Baith said. Similar programs have been implemented in 19 other states, he said, which have been, quote, doing a remarkable job closing that gap, end quote, for workers without retirement savings plans. Though the bills were introduced, some have missed the, quote, funnel, end quote, deadline earlier in February, meaning they are not eligible for consideration, though legislation involving tax, spending, and government oversight are exempt from the deadline. Republican leaders are unlikely to take up the bills. But Confer said introducing the bills is a means to start the conversation on these issues, and that Democrats will likely bring these proposals to the floor as amendments to other bills. Confer said Democrats want to send a message to Iowa workers, quote, we see you, quote, we understand how frustrated you are, Confer said. We know that you're tired of seeing corporations hoard money while you've struggled to pay your bills. We know that you're frustrated that culture war issues are dominating the debate up here, while your issues are being ignored by the majority party. And we know that it's time to put the political games aside and start doing things that will help most Iowans make ends meet, live fuller lives, and enjoy and stay in the state we call home. Government and politics. Bill to reduce required hotel inspections clears Iowa House. By Robin Opsahl, February 27, 2024. The Iowa House passed legislation Tuesday that would shift hotel and motel inspection requirements from biennial inspections to inspecting hotels typically on the basis of complaints. In the past decade, the Iowa Department of Inspections, Appeals, and Licensing has repeatedly violated the law, requiring routine inspections of hotels every 2 years. House File 2426 would codify the department's method of pursuing inspections based on both complaints and risk-based assessments to determine which facilities should be prioritized, removing the previous biennial requirement. The legislation passed 6433 was amended to remove language eliminating dial requirement to conduct annual inspections of businesses permitted to remove or encapsulate asbestos. The original bill would have only required inspections in cases where complaint or referral is filed, injuries or accidents occur, or if a, quote, media notification, end quote, alerts the department that a danger exists. Representative Jeff Cooling, Democrat, Cedar Rapids, said the amendment took a, quote, really, really bad proposed bill, end quote, to just a, quote, really bad, end quote, bill. He criticized Iowa Dial for not following current law requiring inspections every 2 years and the lack of oversight and inspections. While Iowa has 580 licensed hotels subject to inspections by the State Department, Dial has inspected an average of 105 annually in the last 3 years, he said. Cooling said this may largely be because of inadequate staffing. There are currently 22 inspectors at Dial who also inspect food establishments, food processing plants, and home food processing establishments in addition to hotels and motels. That leaves each inspector with an average 542 establishments to inspect. He said there were many cases showing the need for government review of these businesses. Cooling shared stories of hotel inspections that found serious issues at establishments, like a 2022 inspection of a Des Moines motel that found smoke alarms were not working in 5 of the 12 rooms inspected, or a complaint about bed bugs at a Clive hotel that had not been inspected at any time in the 7 years prior. These issues, as well as many other reported violations, have come through investigations using Dial's, quote, current practice, end quote, of complaint-based inspections, Cooling said, while being out of compliance with Iowa code. Quote, so the biggest thing that comes to my mind is the fact that it's impossible to say what issues have gone undetected in Iowa's uninspected hotels, Cooling said. And the state's policy of conducting inspections prior to opening, as is required, lifts. And in response to complaints, give some indication that health and safety risks at Iowa hotels and that they are not up to code for guest comfort. The bill's floor manager, Representative Craig Johnson, Republican Independence, said he did not want to imply, quote, there aren't bad operators or that maybe some of our operators aren't taking care of business, end quote, but that his own experience of hotels in Iowa have largely been positive. Quote, I'm not sure where these hotels are at, and those do sound horrible. Yep, Johnson said. But I think, in the big picture of things, those hotels that are operating like that, their clients probably aren't returning. I've had bad experiences in hotels out of state. I don't go back. That is my consumer choice. During January subcommittee meetings on the bill, advocates with hotel and lodging groups spoke in support of the legislation, saying that the state's hotel industry thinks the complaint-based inspection system works well. But others, like Peter Hurd, a lobbyist for the Iowa Federation of Labor, AFL-CIO, said there is still a need for routine inspections, as many Iowans staying at hotels do not think to file a complaint with the state when they encounter issues like mold or bedbugs at the place they're staying. Johnson also spoke in support of dial inspectors, who he said are, quote, doing the absolutely best they can, end quote, in inspections with only 22 staff available. The bill must first clear the Senate before going to the governor for final approval. The bill's companion, Senate File 2203, passed through the committee process in early February. Government and politics, healthcare, capital clicks. Temp staff at nursing homes, hospitals, could have wages capped under Iowa bill. By Robin Opsahl, February 27, 2024. A bill capping wages for workers with temporary staffing agencies in Iowa nursing homes and hospitals could help rein in costs for medical providers, lawmakers said during House debate Tuesday. But others argued the measures could further worsen workforce shortages in the field. House lawmakers approved House File 2391 Tuesday in an 80-17 vote. The legislation would establish a maximum allowable charge of no more than 150% of the statewide average wage paid by specific types of healthcare facilities to nursing services workers working through a staffing agency. Agencies also would be required to register with the State Department of Inspections, Appeals, and Licensing before being able to work with Iowa healthcare entities. The bill would add new civil penalties for employment agencies that do not comply with Iowa law. If signed into law, the Iowa Department of Health and Human Services may be required to hire 3 new full-time employees at a cost of $200,000 to the state in fiscal year 2025 and $195,000 in fiscal year 2026, according to a fiscal analysis by nonpartisan legislative staff. Representative Timmy Brown Powers, Democrat Waterloo, said while she understood concerns about the 150% cap and increased oversight costs, she said it was necessary to address problems currently facing Iowa healthcare facilities and workers. Quote, if we really look at what's happening, it is a budget problem for hospitals and nursing homes, Brown Powers said. It's a moral issue for healthcare workers that have been there stuck in there, that are working for a rate and working alongside traveling nurses making 3-4 times what they're making, ellipses. I hope that by passing this, that some of those monies will go into increasing those wages for current staff, recruiting new staff, and holding staff at these facilities. Speakers supporting the bill at a subcommittee meeting early in February said the cap would not suppress temp workers' pay, but would create a, quote, level playing field, end quote, for all workers in the industry. Representative John Forbes, Democrat Irmadale, said he understood that there were issues of high costs for agency workers during and following the COVID-19 pandemic, but said he was concerned about, quote, overregulating this industry and telling them what they should be charging for their services, end quote. Though there was, quote, gouging in the system, end quote, Forbes said the 150% cap would discourage staffing agencies from doing business in Iowa. That could leave healthcare facilities without staff who are often providing needed medical support to Iowans. Quote, it's going to make it, I think, difficult for some of these businesses to continue to stay in business in Iowa, Forbes said. And especially being a rural state, a lot of the nursing homes in the rural areas sometimes run into staffing shortages, and this could create some issues, ellipses, especially in rural Iowa, where there is not going to be enough workforce on a very short-term basis to be able to provide these services to our most vulnerable people. The bill is next up for consideration in the Senate. You are listening to the reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for March 1, 2024 on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's continue with this week's stories. Ag and Environment, Capital clicks. Millions of gallons of manure have languished at former swine site for years. By Jared Strong, February 27, 2024. The operators of a defunct hog confinement in southern Iowa have failed for more than 5 years to dispose of its leftover manure, according to the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. The department recently ordered Raul Flores Castillo and Virginia Flores to remove all manure from the rural Albia facility's indoor pits and outdoor lagoon by the end of the year or face potential fines up to $5,000. The DNR estimates that the site has about 2.5 million gallons of liquid manure and nearly 2 million pounds of solids. The facility is relatively small, with a capacity for 700 swine, and was built in the 1980s, according to county records. Quote, a lot of those structures are pretty well built, but if you had a structure that failed and you had a catastrophic release, it could cause significant environmental damage, said Bill Gibbons, a senior environmental specialist for the DNR who investigated the situation. Flores Castillo and Flores bought the swine operation and a house on contract in March 2018, a recent DNR order said. But the department went to inspect the operation 8 months later and learned that it had no animals. State rules require manure from shuttered animal confinements to be removed within 6 months of closures. In the ensuing years, the operators said they were seeking to repopulate the facility and later that they could not afford to remove the manure, the DNR order said. Gibbons estimated that it will cost tens of thousands of dollars to dispose of the leftover manure. He said the operators are seeking help from a federal conservation office to obtain a loan to pay for it. If manure remains at the site after December 2024, the operators face fines of $1,000 for each further month they are out of compliance with state regulations, up to $5,000. Education, healthcare, justice. Appeals court upholds law banning mask mandates in schools. Court, parents and ARC of Iowa lack legal standing to sue. By Clark Kaufman, February 27, 2024. A federal appeals court has ruled that a group of Iowa parents of children with disabilities lack the legal standing to sue the state over a law prohibiting schools from imposing mask mandates. ARC of Iowa, a nonprofit that helps individuals with intellectual disabilities, and the parents of several Iowa children with disabilities, had sued the state over a law that prevents schools from imposing mask mandates on students and staff to combat the spread of COVID-19. On Tuesday, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals sided with the state by stating the plaintiffs lacked the legal standing to bring such a lawsuit. The legal battle dates back to 2021, when Governor Kim Reynolds signed legislation prohibiting school districts from imposing mask mandates on staff and students. That triggered a lawsuit brought by ARC of Iowa and the parents of children who have disabilities or chronic health conditions that put them at greater risk of complications if they contract COVID-19. The parents alleged the state was violating the Americans with Disabilities Act by making it impossible for school districts to make reasonable accommodations for their children through the imposition of mask mandates. An injunction was issued preventing the enforcement of the new law, but Reynolds appealed that decision. In 2022, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit vacated the injunction, noting that COVID-19 conditions in classrooms had changed since the beginning of the pandemic. That ruling focused only on the injunction and not on the broader issue of the law's legality. Litigation over that issue continued, and in November 2022, a federal judge again ruled in favor of the parents, noting that Doctors for Three Students had recommended the students' teachers and classmates be masked. In that decision, the district court stated that the new law could not be cited as the sole basis for denying a school's request for a waiver of the mask mandate law due to the Americans with Disabilities Act, and that law's requirement that schools provide, quote, reasonable accommodation, end quote, to meet the needs of students with disabilities. Reynolds appealed the ruling, arguing that ARC and the parents lacked any legal standing to bring their case, and that they had not satisfied all the requirements of the ADA. In its ruling on Tuesday, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals noted that to establish standing, ARC of Iowa and the parents would have to show an injury tied to the conduct of the state and show that such an injury could be redressed by a favorable court ruling. The appeals court found that ARC of Iowa and the parents could show no such injury and had simply challenged, quote, rights, end quote, that they believe schools should have with regard to mask mandates. Quote, "The crux of any dispute, if there is one, appears to perhaps be between the state and the school districts," the appeals court stated. "Since the school districts did not appeal and are not a party before us, the precise nature of any ongoing dispute is unclear to us," end quote. Citing prior decisions in other jurisdictions, the court said, quote, "The general risks associated with COVID-19, even though COVID-19 remains an ever-present concern in society, are not enough to show imminent and substantial harm for standing," end quote. Those prior decisions found that the increased risk of contracting COVID-19 was, quote, "insufficient," end quote, to demonstrate an impending future injury, in part because the odds of contracting COVID-19 and suffering complications would be speculative. Because ARC of Iowa and the parents of the disabled students, quote, "only alleged the potential risk of severe illness should they contract COVID-19 at school, the risk of harm is too speculative," the court said in its decision Tuesday. It added that even if the added risk of contracting COVID-19 wasn't speculative, the plaintiff still had not alleged that a school had denied the request for a mask mandate as a reasonable accommodation they were seeking under the rights bestowed by the ADA. Although the appeals court decision doesn't address the merits of a ban on mask mandates, Reynolds and Byrd characterized the ruling as a victory for parents and for freedom. Quote, "While children were the least vulnerable, they paid the highest price for COVID-19 lockdowns and mandates, but Iowa was a different story," Reynolds said in a written statement. "Iowa was the first state to get students back in the classroom, and we prohibited mask mandates in schools, trusting parents to decide what was best for their children. Elected leaders should always trust the people they serve, and I promise I would do it again." In a written statement, Byrd said, quote, "Freedom wins in today's court ruling to uphold Iowa's law banning mask mandates in schools. Parents have the right to choose what healthcare decisions are best for their kids. As Attorney General, I support Iowans' rights and freedoms and will continue fighting to defend them." Abortion policy, government, and politics. House passes bill requiring schools show fetal development videos to students. By Robin Opsahl, February 28, 2024. As the Iowa House passed a bill requiring schools to show fetal development videos to students, Democrats raised concerns about the measure being used to push anti-abortion views. House File 2617 passed 58-35 Tuesday, going to the Senate for consideration. The legislation would require instructors of human growth and development and health classes to show students in grades 7 through 12 videos that show ultrasounds, growth of a fetus's brain, heart, and organs, as well as rendering or animations of the process of fertilization, fetal growth during a pregnancy, until birth. The bill cites, quote, "Meet baby Olivia," end quote, as an example of what material should be shown by classrooms. The Baby Olivia video was created by an anti-abortion group, Live Action. The organization's website names a goal to, quote, "shift public opinion on the killing of preborn children." Representative Molly Buck, Democrat Ankeny, said the legislation would advocate for a specific anti-abortion position, but would also spread, quote, "misinformation," end quote. Some of the details and timelines of fetal development presented as fact in the video do not align with information on these subjects as presented by medical organizations, like the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, she said. Schools should encourage students to develop critical thinking skills, Buck said, not, quote, "serve as a platform for personal views or misinformation," end quote. Quote, "The question of when life begins is deeply personal," Buck said. "It varies among individuals. It varies among families. And honestly, it varies among faiths. And it's not the role of our chamber to prescribe what people believe or require teachers to influence young people with propaganda. Our focus should be on nurturing an educational environment that values independent thinking, a teaching environment that supports educators, and environments that prepare students to engage thoughtfully with complex issues." Democrats also criticized the legislation for being part of a larger national movement to require Baby Olivia and similar videos be shown in school classrooms. A version of the legislation was signed into law in North Dakota in 2023, and state legislatures in West Virginia, Missouri, and Kentucky are currently considering similar proposals this year. Representative Sharon Steckman, Democrat Mason City, cited reporting from the West Virginia debate on the bill, where the West Virginia Senate Majority Leader Tom Tabucco, a Republican, voted against requiring schools show the Baby Olivia video because of the medical inaccuracies on fetal development it includes. Quote, This is what he said, subquote, "If we're going to codify something that we're going to teach, this is fact. It needs to be fact," Steckman said. "In my opinion, this video is promoting a public opinion, and it reminds me of a quote I heard just the other day," ellipses, it said, subquote, "To enshrine one opinion in our schools is the very definition of politics." The legislation's floor manager, Representative Ann Osmundson, Republican Volga, emphasized that Baby Olivia video was not required by the bill, but was a, quote, "suggestion," end quote. However, Osmundson defended the video, saying that information included was, quote, "reviewed and endorsed by several medical experts," end quote. She also said the measure would ensure Iowa students are learning, quote, "a basic fact about human development in a very approachable way," end quote. Quote, "This is scientific information," Osmundson said. "This is teaching basic biology to our children, and it helps to answer one of life's biggest questions. Where did I come from?" Education, government, and politics. House passes bill to cap public university tuition, codify DEI directives. By Brooklyn Dracy, February 29, 2024. Despite concerns voiced by Democrats about politics driving legislation with huge impact for public higher education in Iowa, the, quote, "Higher Education Reform Act of 2024, end quote, will move ahead. The Iowa House passed House File 2558 Thursday with a vote of 56-39. As amended, the bill would cap tuition at 3% and freeze it for certain students' 4 years of undergraduate studies and prohibit the creation of new administrative positions without Board of Regents approval. The bill would also codify diversity, equity, and inclusion directives that include eliminating DEI positions and offices that aren't required for accreditation and ensuring support services are available to all students. Much of the opposition to the bill related to the DEI directives, with House Democrats saying the term has been politicized and demonized, leading to gutting of programs that are necessary for education and future employment. House Minority Leader Jennifer Confer said what DEI actually means is welcoming people of all types and backgrounds and providing a fair environment for all, and she said she wasn't sure what is so scary about that. Quote, "It clearly is a political bill," Confer said. "It clearly is a bill that creates more inefficiencies, increases costs, reduces services, and puts the accreditation of our region's institutions at risk." Confrist and other House members said eliminating DEI offices and opportunities would hurt Iowa's future workforce as employers look for skills relating to DEI when hiring. Representative Ross Wilburn, Democrat Ames, said he's spoken with employers trying to recruit in Iowa who are concerned about the DEI directives and what they could mean for students coming out of state universities. Businesses are looking for people who have skills in bringing people together respectably and handling groups' similarities and differences, Wilburn said. And DEI programs can help students develop these skills. When it came to the policy requiring state universities to offer support services provided by DEI offices to all students on campus, House Democrats brought up concerns that there could be additional cost and manpower burdens on the offices that provide these supports. Representative Eleanor Levin, Democrat Iowa City, said different students have different needs, and making it so all support services need to be available for all students would be ignoring the fact that people have individual needs and assuming everyone will find out what they need in the same way. Representative Taylor Collins, Republican Mediapolis, the bill manager, said in floor debate that Iowans and Americans are losing trust in higher education, citing Gallup polls that reported only 36% of Americans have confidence in higher education compared to 57% in 2015. While he said he appreciated his colleagues' comments on DEI services and what they're meant to do, they've turned into, quote, "ideological enforcement centers," end quote. And for the sake of Iowa students, they need to be regulated. The bill would also add two ex officio non-voting members of the state's General Assembly to the board, shorten voting members' terms from 6 years to 4, require the board only meet 4 times per year instead of 7, and require approval from the Senate before electing a new board president. Collins said he'd like to see a more active Board of Regents, to which Representative Sue Cahill, Democrat Marshalltown, responded that the opposite would happen under this bill, with the board meeting less often and the bill creating a presidential selection committee to handle filling university president positions rather than involving the whole board. It instead takes the board away from its duties. It could also leave universities in a more difficult hiring position, she said. Concerns were also raised about the tuition cap and freezes, and the lack of language in the bill that would offer any additional support to universities to fill the funding gaps. Confer said, while she applauds lowering costs for students and capping tuition, the public universities aren't well-funded enough to handle the loss of funds the cap will bring. This could lead to program closures, she said, which could drive students to colleges outside of the state. Collins said capping tuition at 3% is both reasonable for students and sustainable for universities. Representative Beth Wessel Kroxkel, Democrat Ames, said she's sad to see attacks against the state universities continue as they have for years, and that lawmakers should be lifting them up rather than taking away supports and restricting them. Quote, if we didn't have the region's institutions, we would be losing such a huge economic engine, and if we don't support them, that economic engine isn't going to work for us, Wessel Kroxkel said. We can continue to ask them to cut and cut and cut, but there's a point where they need to know that we're behind them so that they can grow and help us solve some of the problems that the state has. In his closing remarks, Collins read a message he received from a faculty member at Iowa State University. The faculty member stated that rather than fostering a welcoming environment for people of all kinds, DEI instead promotes judgment and, quote, othering, end quote, of people with labels like, quote, oppressed and, quote, oppressor, and suppresses the voices who are afraid of being canceled. Quote, this bill stops the pursuit of these distractions and ideological agendas, reorients the focus of our higher education system back to the pursuit of academic excellence, which should have been the point from the start, controls the ever-rising cost of higher education, and gives this body increased oversight over the Regent enterprise, Collins said. The bill moves next to the Senate. Government and politics. Capital clicks. Iowa House sends State Religious Freedom Restoration Act to Governor. By Robin Opsahl, February 29, 2024. Iowa is poised to join states including Georgia and Utah in passing a state version of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in 2024. As House lawmakers sent the legislation to Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds Thursday. House lawmakers passed SF 2095 with a 61-33 vote. The legislation, similar to a 1993 federal law, supported former President Bill Clinton and a Democrat-led Congress, would provide a higher legal standard be used in cases where a person claims that a government action has infringed on their ability to freely practice a religion. Governments would be required to have a compelling interest and be using the least restrictive means to uphold an action that would, quote, substantially burden, end quote, a person's religious liberties. Democrats in both chambers have criticized legislation known as RFRA for potentially being used to justify discrimination against LGBTQ Iowans and other minority populations in the state. During the floor debate, Democratic Representatives Beth Wessel Kroxkel, Lindsey James, and Megan Svirvinas discussed cases in which religious liberties were invoked to justify refusal to provide services for LGBTQ individuals and refusal to provide reproductive health care medication. House Minority Leader Jennifer Confer said the bill also would have a negative impact on Iowa's economy and would add to the state's workforce shortage. Confer said business leaders in the state are opposed to the measure as it could be used to target businesses on the basis of religious beliefs. Businesses also fear the bill and other measures supported by Republican lawmakers, like those focused on LGBTQ individuals, make it more difficult to recruit and retain workers in Iowa. Quote, this bill hurts the communities that we serve, and this bill makes it harder for those businesses to do their job, Confer said. Nothing can be more relevant to this legislation than the impact it has on the people affected by it. The bill's floor manager, Representative Stephen Holt, Republican Denison, said Democrats were mischaracterizing the legislation. He said cases where RFRA was cited to allow for racial discrimination would fail in court. He pointed out that RFRA laws have been used in cases to protect marginalized populations, including a case where a court ruled that a school district violated a Native American kindergarten student's religious liberties by punishing him for having long hair. Holt said unless people have a desire to, quote, rig the system against people of faith, end quote, the proposal should not be controversial. Quote, many of our nation's earliest settlers came here to escape religious persecution, Holt said. In 2024, Iowans should be free to live and work according to their faith, without fear of being unjustly punished by the government. This legislation, ellipses, guarantees only that everyone gets a fair day in court when the government intrudes on one of our most sacred freedoms. Reynolds released a statement supporting the bill's passage Thursday evening. Quote, "The right of religious freedom is endowed upon us by our Creator, not government," Reynolds said in a statement. "Our founders recognized this principle, and today the Iowa House took a step forward to protect it. 23 states around the country, with both Republican and Democratic governors, have passed similar laws. Now it's Iowa's turn." Justice. Iowa, quote, "game master," end quote, sues Texas company over role-playing game. By Clark Kaufman, February 29, 2024. A, quote, "certified therapeutic game master," end quote, from Iowa is suing a Texas company called Geek Therapeutics for libel, slander, and copyright infringement over a planned Dungeons & Dragons spinoff. Sean Thomas and his Ankeny company, Tabletop Adventures, are suing Geek Therapeutics and its founder, Dr. Anthony Bean, a licensed psychologist, in U.S. District Court for Southern District of Iowa. The lawsuit revolves around Thomas's development of a role-playing tabletop game called Realms of Chimoria. The lawsuit claims that players of the game inhabit a fictional world that provides an inclusive and welcoming environment for all types of individuals. Thomas alleges that in creating Realms of Chimoria, he produced graphical maps, stories in the form of written prose, and graphic depictions of various characters within the stories. In 2021, he created a limited liability company, Tabletop Adventure, to hold the copyrights, trademarks, and other rights associated with the game. That same year, the lawsuit alleges, Thomas acquired his, quote, "therapeutic game master certification," end quote, from Geek Therapeutics, signaling his ability to host role-playing games in therapeutic environments. Soon thereafter, Thomas and Bean allegedly began discussing a potential licensing agreement whereby Geek Therapeutics would manufacture, market, and distribute Realms of Chimoria. The lawsuit alleges Thomas was concerned about losing control of the intellectual property rights associated with the game, and that Bean agreed all such rights would remain with Thomas. Negotiations continued through December 2022, when it was learned that a California company called Wizards of the Coast was planning major changes in its licensing agreements that allow third parties to create games using rules that are compatible with its popular Dungeons & Dragons role-playing game. Among the planned changes was one that would grant to Wizards of the Coast a perpetual royalty-free license to use the officially licensed third-party games for any purpose. The lawsuit claims this plan triggered, quote, an uproar in the tabletop community, end quote, because many game developers had created business models centered on their compatibility with Dungeons & Dragons rules. Thomas was among the concerned developers because he had intended to make Realms of Chimoria compatible with Dungeons & Dragons, but was opposed to the Wizards of the Coast licensing arrangement, according to the lawsuit. Geek Therapeutics, however, opted to pursue compatibility and move forward with its marketing plans for Realm of Chimoria. Despite the alleged lack of a finalized licensing agreement between Thomas and the Texas company Geek Therapeutics, launched a Kickstarter crowdfunding campaign to get Realms of Chimoria to market. In April 2023, Thomas allegedly demanded that Geek Therapeutics immediately cease all efforts to reproduce and distribute his game. According to the lawsuit, Geek Therapeutics announced earlier this month plans to distribute and sell the game through its Kickstarter campaign. Quote, "hundreds of people have pre-registered," end quote, to provide support for the game, the lawsuit claims, and various websites and merchandise have been created to promote and sell the game. In addition to an injunction, Thomas's lawsuit seeks damages for copyright infringement, as well as libel and slander, with Thomas alleging the defendant sent its Kickstarter backers a supportive email that falsely claimed to be from him. The defendants have yet to file a response to the lawsuit. And that does it for today's reading of the Iowa Capital Dispatch for March 1st, 2024. I'm your reader, Stephen Gaisher. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is EarthDate. A decade ago, there were typically 20 earthquakes a year that were large enough to feel in the central and eastern U.S. But in 2015, there were over 1,000 of them. Why? It's mostly because we're pumping more water into the ground. The boom in U.S. oil and gas production over the last decade has brought many more oil wells, which also produce water. Most is naturally occurring in the formation, and some was injected by operators to allow or improve the recovery of oil and gas. In both cases, the water will likely have picked up salt and other minerals from the rock, making it many times saltier than seawater. Operators may re-inject this water to continue to liberate oil and gas. But more often, there's too much to handle, so it's trucked or piped to disposal wells, where it's pumped down into deep saltwater reservoirs. Adding large volumes of wastewater increases the pressure in these rock formations, which can allow natural faults to slip more easily than they normally would, causing earthquakes. To address these quakes, regulators and the petroleum industry are monitoring disposal wells and shutting down those that could cause damaging seismic activity. And they now think that managing wastewater injection more carefully should help. There's still more work to be done, and university research centers, like the Bureau of Economic Geology, are conducting major studies with the aim of minimizing the risk of earthquakes while maintaining the benefits of domestic energy production. For EarthDate, I'm Scott Tinker.
EarthDate is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.